And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me, down here on the south side of town in Rutherford County. Willie Donick hanging out over in East Nashville, representing the east side. Willie, what's up?
What's up, guys?
Chase McCabe on the west side, out in Bellevue. Chase?
How are we doing? I'm doing great.
Great. Great. Everybody's in good spirits. Oh, yeah. Marquise Munson back at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike. That's our Wholesale Link Game Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. Marquise, how's it going?
How you guys doing? How you fellas doing today on this Thursday?
Well, what I can safely say is we're all doing better than Chris Johnson.
Yeah.
For the time being.
What a segue.
Yeah, how about that, huh?
That was good.
This is why you're radio gold, Darren McFarland.
It's like you've been doing this for a while.
Well, he's not in trouble, dare I say, yet. Shouldn't I throw in yet, right?
Yeah.
Because it seems like that's not good. And, you know, we've learned over the years. I'll never forget probably the best example, for me at least, when things started changing is Willie and I were down in Atlanta with George. We were doing the show down there, an afternoon drive at Turner Field. It was right before, I believe, help me with my time frame. Was this before Braves-Yankees game? Is that correct, Willie, I think?
And are you talking about Michael Jackson?
Michael Jackson.
Ooh, that was
died.
My birthday.
And TMZ was the first all over it, and nobody else would really touch it. There was, obviously, this is, you know, pre-Twitter. This is, technology was nowhere near that it is today. And, you know, it was still
2009. Which actually Twitter launched in 2009. So
I was going to say, yeah, but it nobody, I was not on in 2009. I don't think I got on until 2010. But TMZ was the one that was brought, and everybody else was really hesitant to go there. And TMZ nailed it, of course, and it's not anything that, you know, you're it just changed everything. It changed to me the mindset 11 years later. Like, we don't really ever balk at anything TMZ puts out there. But there was a time when it was like, oh, it was TMZ. But to me, that all went away after that one because they nailed it. I mean, they had it. I mean, they absolutely had it. And since then, I mean, I've lost count of how many stories they've broken. I mean, were they not the one that was all over the Kobe story first?
Yep. They broke it. So they have put stuff out there that has turned out to be true. And if you remember that day in 2009, so June 25th, that was my 22nd birthday. Farrah Fawcett had passed away earlier in the day. And then the Michael Jackson news came out.
That's right.
I remember going to, there was a bar downtown called Decades. We went to Decades that night, and they played all Michael Jackson. That's all they were playing. It was Michael Jackson music. So
Decades, was that on 2nd Avenue?
Yeah.
1st Avenue, right? 2nd Avenue?
Yep.
Yeah, 2nd Avenue.
I can't remember, or I don't know what's there now. I'm trying to think exactly where it was. That might be where headquarters Beercade is.
No.
That could be.
Mm-mm.
No?
Mm-mm.
I don't remember. So many bars have come and gone since those days.
So the story is that he is being accused of funding a murder for hire. Like I said, this is according to TMZ Sports. Chris Johnson is facing some pretty hefty accusations. This has involved a murder for hire shooting that killed two men in 2016. This is according to the court documents that TMZ Sports obtained. He has not been formally charged with the crime by authorities. And he is denying everything, but they are currently laying out a case against Chris Johnson. Now, this is going back to what? One of his friends was killed in 2015.
It's when he was shot.
And he was shot during that, correct?
Yeah, his friend was driving the car, and his friend died. He got shot in the shoulder, and so it was. If you're kind of putting it all together, it was like a revenge thing. And the report says that Johnson's shooting, when he was shot, it was essentially a hit on him. So he was the target. So that's where this all stems from.
I have to – in how bizarre of a world do we live in that we probably all had the same thing pop into our mind, for better or worse, when we just read the allegation? What murder for hire did we just get done talking about last week?
I know.
Joe Exotic.
The number one murder for hire person in the news because of the phenomenon of Tiger King is Joe Exotic. So first Joe Exotic, and now how crazy is that that this story comes out? But certainly we hope, because, you know, our Chris Johnson, you know, he was such – we just got had a phenomenal interview last week with Jeff Fisher about all the great things about Chris Johnson, the excitement that he created and things like that. You know, I just hope that this isn't true. That's all you can hope for at this time. We'll have to see where it goes, but definitely a disturbing story.
Indeed it is. We've got our bracket. Things going on. Let's recap what happened yesterday in the Jeff Fisher and Tim Corbin regions. Chase, do you have that in front of you?
I do. So Eddie George defeated John Jenkins 83-17. I pulled up the wrong one. My bad.
You skipped today. I did.
I'm scrolling through Twitter to try and to pull everything up, and it just makes it kind of difficult to do that. So give me just a second.
Okay, so as you do that, let's set the table here. We had a new record for the closest vote of any matchup the entire time so far, and it beat the Victor Arvidsson, Sonny Gray. Remember, that one was neck and neck, and we had one that was very similar and even closer last night. It literally went down to the final two or three votes. If you do the math, you know, there weren't five votes that separated this thing. If five people swung the other way, it would have gone the other way between David Price and Frank Wycheck.
All right, here we go. So, yeah, so Steve McNair defeats Javon Kearse, his teammate, 89%-11%. It was no contest. Steve McNair ran away with it the entire day, and so he moves on. This one was close at times, but Roman Josi pretty much always had control. The two over the three, 65%-35%. So Josi advances, and Willie just mentioned Frank Wycheck, David Price, the margin of victory there, and how close it was. Frank Wycheck knocks off David Price, the first one seed to fall, and Frank Wycheck moves on. Shea Weber defeats Chris Johnson, 62%-38%. So I'm very intrigued by the matchups now, as you have McNair going against Josi and Wycheck now against Shea Weber.
So it has been, with the upset of Wycheck, I was going to say it's been chalk because you've got 1-2, but in this one you have 4-2. So, that'll be interesting. But today we have got over on the right side of the bracket, Phil Bredesen region and the David Poile region, and currently Eddie George, the one seed, going up against the 4 seed, Mike Fisher. Eddie George right now in control with 75% of the vote. Long ways to go, but already a good amount of votes coming in, and that one currently has the most voting activity. Mookie Betts, who we will have on the show in the next hour, is the 2 seed going up against the upset special, Cinderella, Kevin Dyson, the 14 seed. And right now Mookie Betts in control with 66% of the vote. Pacarine, the 1 seed, over his teammate, Victor Arvidsson, the 13 seed, right now 97% of the vote going Pacarine's way. Wow.
Yeah. It was 100% just a few minutes ago. So Arvidsson just got some votes go his way.
Wow.
Well, let's be honest. Arvy is like the Valparaiso. You know, he's done a tremendous job to get to the Sweet 16, but now you go up against the juggernaut.
Yeah. It looks that way. It looks like Pekka jumped out to a 16-2 run, and Victor has called a full timeout early on. Long ways to go, but it's 16-2 right out of the gates.
What was the line on that?
Pekka by 10.5.
Yeah. Didn't even see a money line. Didn't even see a money line for that.
Pekka by 10.5 was the line. And finally, the 6-7 seeds going up against each other. Bruce Matthews, the 6, Philip Forsberg. The 7, of course, Philip Forsberg knocked off Derrick Henry in the last round to get to this point. Philip Forsberg with 71% of the vote right now over Bruce Matthews. So how about that? So you've got Forsberg in control, Mookie Betts in control, and Eddie George and Mike Fisher did not see that gap like that this early on. Poor Victor. I kind of felt like I didn't think it's going to be this lopsided. It probably won't be this lopsided, but Pekka looks like he is well on his way, and we're going to have this thing down to 8 athletes after today. So remember, keep going to thegamenashville.com, at 1025 The Game on Twitter. Cast your votes. The turnouts have been great, and there's no reason to stop now. And right now, Mookie Betts, who will join us next hour, he is the last athlete left in this thing that is not a Predator, a current or former Predator or Titan. True?
Yeah.
It's all Preds and Titans, except for Mookie. And so Mookie will join us at 11 o'clock. It'll be great to catch up with him as he continues to get ready for the season, whenever it may be. We spent a lot of time yesterday talking about different possibilities there. But here's another thing. Did you guys see? I mean, this might be the difference between Philip Forsberg. It's a 7 versus a 6, right? Bruce Matthews and Philip Forsberg. It's a toss-up. But Philip Forsberg's piano playing from his high-rise condo in Nashville, that might be the difference right now. Did you see that?
I did.
I did not, no.
Oh, you gotta look it up. It's a funny. So it's like, what are you doing in quarantine? One of those type of things. And you know, Philip goes through a routine of 4 or 5 different activities he does in his living quarters with his girlfriend. So it's quite amusing. He does a good job. I think you know, him being top of mind is probably playing a role on the internet. You know, this is a Twitter thing. You've probably scrolled through Twitter, many of the voters, to see Philip Forsberg's tremendous performance yesterday. That might be a key to today's matchup.
I will have to check that out for sure. All right, we will come back. Speaking of checking out, you should listen to our interview with David Price. It was fantastic. Late in the show yesterday, so if you missed it, you're going to want to hear this. And, of course, at the time you were hearing this interview, David Price was trailing Frank Wycheck by a lot more than what it turned out to. I mean, it came down at the very, very end, as you just heard us talk about before David Price. And it was funny, how you'll hear in this interview, like David was saying, you know, I don't want to say he was conceding, but he was like, hey, if I'm going to lose, losing Frank Wycheck's okay. You know, he was okay with it. He was at peace if he went down. I'll put it that away. All right, so you're going to want to hear this. Los Angeles Dodgers pitcher David Price, weird to say, former Vanderbilt great, former Blackman standout. You will hear from him on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. David Price is on the line with us. David Price 24 on Twitter. You've heard, David, you're going to need to get the call. All of your fans need to get you to vote. Get them to vote for you and get you into the Elite Eight in our bracket.
I think Mr. Wycheck kind of got stiffed on the rankings. He's he's a pretty pretty big icon, you know, in Middle Tennessee. You know, I remember where I was when Music City Miracle happened and his part in that, and how special that was of a time in my life. You know, it was one of those moments that I will definitely never forget. So if I lose to somebody, you know, Frank Wycheck's a good somebody to lose to.
Well said. All right, Los Angeles Dodgers pitcher David Price on the line with us. Is it weird to hear that? It's weird to say it.
I think the weirdness has kind of worn off a little bit.
Okay.
You know, it just for me, everything's kind of come full circle. You know, the Dodgers are the team that drafted me, kind of came full circle with them. You know, the first GM that drafted me out of college was Andrew Friedman. You know, he is the GM with the Dodgers. So just a lot of pieces falling back together. It's pretty neat to see that.
So how are you and your family dealing with the pandemic that we're going through? How has this been at home? This is obviously unusual for all of us.
Yeah, it's been unusual. You know, my son doesn't understand why we can't go to the park and stuff like that, and just why we have to stay at home. But you know, we've been handling, I feel like, as best as we could. Everybody trying to stay active and going outside and is doing as much as we can outside and trying to social distance as well. But it's definitely been different. But, you know, I think if everybody continues to do their part and social distance, we will get through this.
Yeah, well said. Your sport is a little bit unique, as you have the ability. I think baseball and basketball a lot of people have a setup at home where you can do things with your sport. Hockey players, they don't have a rink in their backyard, and so the playing surface prevents them from doing. So, as a pitcher, as a Major League Baseball player, what can you do at home to I guess, get you ready when it's time to go moving forward?
Body weight workout stuff. I mean, if you have a gym, that works too. If you have a net, like a net you can hit golf balls into, you can throw into that. There's a lot of different ways you can kind of get your work in. Obviously, it's not going to be the same. You can't compare the intensity of facing somebody wearing a different jersey and stuff of that nature. So you're just trying to deal with this the best you can. There's sock throws, putting a sanitary sock over your arm and putting a baseball there at the end and just playing catch into that sock. That's something I've done whenever I've been coming back from injuries or been on vacation and hadn't had anybody to throw with. It's all stuff that I've done before. So just trying to stick with that program as best as possible and stay ready for whenever they tell us to come back.
David Price is with us. We're talking baseball with him. And, of course, he is one of the top national athletes of the last 30 years. And, David, we've had some great conversations with some of your peers that you went to school with at Vanderbilt, or maybe some guys that came along a little bit before you, a little bit after you, and also a lot of these Titans and Predators we're talking about as well. But so let's go down memory lane a little bit. I remember reading a story about you as a kid, and I'm sure we've all been a little reflective here, but it involves you at your house by yourself picking up a ball and hitting it over the top of your house and then going to the other side of the house, the backyard, hitting it back over to the front yard. Or something like that. Do you remember that story? Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's a story my mom would always tell about me whenever I was two and a half, three years old. Just going outside with a little wiffle ball and a plastic bat and hitting the ball over the house. And I know my son can't do that, but I have an ex-teammate in Brock Holt and his three-year-old little boy. He absolutely drops bombs, and it's fun to watch. He posts a lot of videos of it, and I've seen it in person. So now that I've seen a two-and-a-half, three-year-old do that, I can kind of believe my mom's story a little bit more now, but that's a story that she continues to tell, and hitting was always something I really enjoyed doing.
So as you grew up, those formative years, it's funny when we're talking about these backyard games, I feel like a lot of us are trying to come up with creative games like this that you can do under the circumstances. We're playing a lot of wall ball at the end of the street off a brick wall, the back of a grocery store for my son and I, just throwing it up there. But when you decided to – what was the key to your development when you were that age? Let's say, those little league ages, 8, 9, 10. Who were the key influences on you? Who kept you on the right path and who got you really interested in baseball?
I mean, I have to say my parents got me into baseball. I was the only one in my family that played it. We always watched the Atlanta Braves play. That was something we did every single night. We watched the Braves play and ate dinner. It was just part of our routine. And I fell in love with the Braves. Obviously, their dominance over the 90s and early 2000s was, something that I was a fan of. And I think, watching all the great players that they had, my favorite player was David Justice, but being able to watch, John Smoltz and Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine and all those guys go out there and pitch, that helped me as well.
This is another well-told story from the past that I know you've told many times, but I think it was in an article. I believe Lee Jenkins wrote it. It had to do with your first fall semester at Vanderbilt where you were kind of at a crossroads. You hadn't done great on a really good program that was building at the time. And you really had to sort of redirect it, and you had some heart-to-heart talks with Tim Corbin. But it involved, I guess, the word that everybody had stuck with them is you were saying you were going to go work at McDonald's or something like that. Remind us of that story and take us back to that point, because obviously your life has gone in an amazing direction since then.
Yeah, I mean, it was my first fall in college. You know, just you know, in high school, I never had to take books home to study, and I made really good grades, you know, my entire life. And then going to Vanderbilt, that was a change for me, you know, having to prepare and study for classes and put in the time that way. And it was also very demanding on the baseball field. You know, that was I wasn't used to being surrounded by guys that were just as good, if not better than you. I was always you know, the best player on the team growing up, and you know, that had changed, you know, in a matter of just, you know, going to Vanderbilt. So all of that was very difficult, and it hit me, you know, really fast in that first semester. And when I walked in to the clubhouse one day at Vandy, and Coach Corbin had a list of all the pitchers, I think like 1 through 15, you know, had them ranked, and I was number 15. I was like, what in the world? And that was after my first fall ball. I remember, you know, calling Coach Corbin one night, and I was going to tell him that I was going to go work at McDonald's and just, you know, be a normal 18-year-old kid and you know, take that path. I didn't talk to him that night. I talked to him the next morning at the field, and he told me, you know, my future wasn't in flipping burgers at McDonald's. You know, my future was on the baseball field, and everything was going to get easier, and you know, I was going to find my routine at Vanderbilt and on the baseball field. And, you know, everything Coach Corbin always told me was always true. You know, it always came out to be true. From the first time they came over to our house, you know, and talked to my parents and I, it was, you know, everything that they foresaw in the future, you know, has happened. And Coach Corbin is a very special person to me. He is a father figure to me, and he knows how much he means to me and the program at Vanderbilt. It's something I'll always feel like I'm in debt to him and that program.
We're talking to David Price, left-hander for the L.A. Dodgers and, of course, Vanderbilt and Blackman High School. And I'll ask one about your high school career, David, because the first time I ever met you was at Blackman High School. I was doing a local high school sports show, and we came over to do a feature on you as a basketball player. It was interesting because as we were walking out of there, one of the coaches, and I can't remember who it was, but he said, oh, by the way, you ought to see this guy play baseball. He's a pretty good pitcher. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. But being a multi-sport athlete, and Mookie Betts, your teammate, who has now moved over to the Dodgers with you, he was a great multi-sport star as well. I know Tim Corbin always values that with a lot of the players that he recruits. But talk about being you know, open to playing more than one sport. I think it's such a big emphasis that needs to be shared with young players.
And that was going to be another part of my answer to your question before about the biggest influences on me as a kid. That was playing multiple sports. I was always playing something. You know, one season led into the other. You know, there was, you know, very little downtime, and I thought that was very valuable. You know, learning different roles on different teams, because you're not always going to be the type of player in every sport. You know, you might be really good at basketball, but not as good as, you know, in soccer or something like that, or baseball. And you might not be the same player, you know, in different sports. You might be really good at baseball and not as good as basketball. So you're going to learn different roles playing the different sports, you know, at a different level of athlete, I guess. So I think that's very valuable for life.
David, as you moved over to the National League and you got, you know, you guys were close to wrapping up spring training and the season was supposed to start. Obviously, you spent your entire career in the American League, and you, as a pitcher, you don't swing the bat so too much unless you're playing interleague. So, what has that transition been like of getting used to being able to go up to the plate?
We work on bunting a lot more. You know, that's something that we would do every other day. We would have the bunting station right after the end of practice, and that was something I enjoyed doing. And like I said before, you know, hitting was always something I really enjoyed doing. You know, even while I was in the AL, we always looked forward to those interleague games. I looked forward to taking BP those weeks before, and now BP is going to be something that I do, you know, on a regular basis. You know, I think they said they hit 4 or 5 times a week. So it'll be different for me, you know, just being on the base pass and running the bases and and preparing for the game that way. It's just AL baseball is the only type of baseball I know with the DH. So all I had to worry about was pitching. And now I have to worry about hitting and running the bases and preparing for stuff that way. So it'll be fun. I enjoy hitting. I look forward to hitting my first home run. And we can talk about that when that happens.
Oh, yeah. Are you a better hitter than Sonny Gray? That's the key question, too, now that he's in the NL.
Sonny hit a triple in Cincinnati down the right field line last year. That was pretty impressive. It showed his athleticism. It showed how fast he was. So that is it's a very small park, and there's not a lot of triples hit out there, especially by pitchers. So that was pretty impressive. Sonny can swing it.
Last thing, David. We haven't had a chance to catch up with you since you obviously talked about your time at Vanderbilt and what Tim Corbin means to you. But what that second national championship meant for you last year. And, of course, unfortunately, this team does not get to defend their crown. But what that was like last June.
Oh, that was awesome. We're flying to London to play the London series against the Yankees. And they told us not to sleep on the way over there so we could get acclimated to the time change. So I had no problem in that, you know, watching. I didn't get to watch it. Kind of just watched, like, the game day on my phone because the internet wasn't strong enough to pull up any video. But just watching how it all went down, got behind early, and everybody was kind of yelling at me, and we came running back. It was that was cool. And just for Coach Corbin and that program, you know, I know how much he's put into it, how much he cares, how much he loves each and every one of his players and his staff, which is what he's done for me. You know, I wish him nothing but the best and continued success for him and that program. And it's something I enjoy watching year in and year out.
That's awesome. By the way, what was that experience like? We watched it here, watching you guys play over in London, but what was that like to actually do that across the pond?
It was different. You know, I think everybody kind of had different opinions on it, but to be in that atmosphere and how they're explaining the game while we're playing it, and they had a bunch of different scoreboards that had different rules and, you know, what a sacrifice fly was and stuff like that, how we were kind of teaching the game at the same time while we were playing, I thought that was neat. Just all the ceremonies were really cool. All in all, it was a good experience. Happy I didn't have to pitch over there because balls were flying off of baseball bats at a very high velocity. So it was different for everybody. I think I'm happy I don't have to do it again this year. It's canceled, but I'm sure a lot of people really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, you're right. It was fun for the fans to watch. Probably not a lot of fun for pitchers to watch. Hey, thanks for doing this. Yeah, always good to catch up with you. You and the family continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, fellas, I appreciate it.
Usually if you were driving around in your car and you had this on, you were turning the volume up a little bit for those who did that. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, good stuff there from David Price, Los Angeles Dodgers pitcher, former star and standout at Blackman High School down here in Rutherford County where I am, and, of course, a star at Vanderbilt for sure, and the number one pick overall in the Major League Baseball draft. Good talk with him, Mookie Betts, coming up in the second hour. That was a lot of fun, guys. David Price is a guy that I honestly, when you hear that interview, that's considering, you know, he's a low-key guy. And I thought we got the best out of David Price yesterday in that interview.
Yeah, this is the atmosphere right now. I think it's a good atmosphere for interviews because people largely are not in a big hurry to go do things, and really enjoyed that conversation. I thought that was great stuff. Some of the stuff, you know, I knew some of the story, but it was great to hear him talk about it in detail. You know, imagine seeing yourself. I mean, imagine being an athlete like he was at Blackman. I mean, we knew who he was, right? He was on the radar. He gets to Vanderbilt, and he is 15th out of a pitching staff of 15 after fall ball. I mean, imagine watching that unfold, the month-long fall baseball program. And he wasn't better than any of the other pitchers on the staff. Now, they had a pretty good staff, as we know. They had some good pitchers on that staff, but not you would not think that that would happen. So he was really at a crossroads. And as you heard him say, you know, struggling, you know, making the transition to college, especially at a good school like Vanderbilt there. So there was a lot going on there. So I just think that's a great story of, you know, getting through, adapting, you know, growing and reaching your potential.
Yeah. And I think so many of us, you know, have moments of, you know, where you're questioning things, if you're doing the right thing, and you hear a story like that and go, well, it turned out okay. I think it worked out for David Price. So pretty cool. And you can tell how much Tim Corbin continues to mean to him as well.
No doubt about it. Guys, we've got today's brain exercise up there. We don't want your brain to turn to mush during quarantine time. We're trying to keep you active and stimulated, and we're going to put your brain to work today. It is up. It's been tweeted out, and got a nice prize attached to it, and we'll see who can come up with some correct answers. Have you guys seen it yet?
Yep.
Oh, yes, I've seen this. And, Darren, you know I'm still trying to get this. I have not.
This one is the most controversial of all of them.
Well, I've had three or four incorrect answers at this point, and so I scrapped it the other day. I cleared my head. I put it away for a couple days. Now I'm taking a fresh look, starting over, and I'm going to see what happens. I'm going to see what happens.
Okay. Well, let's see where everybody goes with this one. This was,
by the way, you have not revealed the answer to yesterday's.
Well, that's where I was going. That's where I was going. This one, by the way, is a lot like the first one that we did on Monday. So this one's kind of going down that path. The last couple of days we've done squares and figuring out the combination lock. Yesterday people struggled. Yesterday was not easy. The squares was difficult, and I don't know what the final data was. I think it was definitely less than 50% correct answers on the squares. But if you look at if you know, it's hard to do this one on radio because it's much more of a visual. The correct answer was 40. And it'll be, I've kind of tried to go over the answers on the show, but it's hard with this one because if you don't have it in front of you, you don't know what the heck we're talking about. I guess the quickest way to do it, I did not get this one on the first go around either. Willie, this one was more difficult. The more you do it, the more you come up with, right? You just know initially, that's the way I felt. Like, I just knew the first number I thought I came up with, I was like, I just know it's going to be more. There's no way it's going to be this. I know there's more. I know I'm missing something. The first number that I came up with was 31. And it took me a while to piece together the nine they're called 2x2 squares. And if you look at the picture, that's basically squares within squares. And that's what really threw me off. It took me a while.
Yeah, I missed one set. That's the one that I, that's where I went wrong. I got it on the second try, but I looked at the layers of squares. That's what, to me, is really interesting about that puzzle. And I missed one set of four. So my first answer was 36, and I noticed a lot of the people who weighed in had 36.
Mm-hmm. They did. There were a
lot
of 36
guesses. And they missed the four.
Guesses.
I'll bet you they missed the same four that I missed. Sort of the three, you know, they overlap. That's the, I think they might be the only ones that overlap.
Well,
the last four that I saw.
Yeah, well, no, that's the 2x2 squares overlap. That's what threw me off.
It's the 3x3 overlap.
Yours
is the one that I missed.
Yeah, the 3x3, correct. 3x3.
I had a headache after trying to do that one.
Well,
but your brain is working. That's
working.
The thing.
It is.
Yeah.
And
your blood
smart.
Is flowing. That's a good sign. That's your brain telling you, Chase, keep giving me these. Keep feeding me. Keep feeding me.
Especially if I'm going to watch
you can get
stuff
this,
like
Chase.
Tiger
I want
King.
You to get this one right today. Darren, what do you think?
Well, Chase hasn't even tried. That's been the most disappointing thing. Like, Chase hasn't even attempted it. Forget, like, giving up after 19 guesses. He hasn't
even tried.
I've
disappointed people my whole life by not trying, so, you know.
Well, that's just – look, if I were your coach and you were on the ball team, that would not fare well. Like, you can't – there's no effort. Where's the effort?
Oh, you would
– Where's
you
the effort?
My coach. I mean, I'm looking at it. Like, I've attempted via text in some of these, but like I don't know. I'm very confused by this. The one you have posted today, my head already hurts because I just don't understand it.
I think it's time to have the tough talk, and you know sometimes you have to do this, but you're more equipped for rec brain teasers. Okay, I'm just gonna let you know, Chase.
That's fine.
That's how I feel about your abilities right now. I don't think you're ready for this level. Travel brain teasers. I think you're more suited for rec brain
wreck
teasers,
ball.
And you can pick flowers out in the outfield, chase yeah. dragonflies.
Yeah, that's probably me.
Meanwhile, while you
know
guys
you
have
are.
Had this conversation, Chris Mason has weighed in with three different answers on the – he's changed his answer twice.
Oh, people haven't been afraid to submit yeah. way more than one answer. There's no doubt about
but
that,
he,
and that's
he
okay.
He says he submitted his final answer.
Yeah, that's the best are the people. I've had a lot of – I've enjoyed – I've told you, I think it was yesterday or the day before, my favorite at that point was the people. But, you know, they give the answer, exclamation point, boom, take that, and it's the wrong answer. So those have been fun. And then the other ones are the ones that keep going, this is my final answer. No, seriously, this is my final answer, and they just – keep guessing, and then you know 15 minutes later they've submitted. No, okay, wait a minute, I just read this is my final answer. They do that about three or four times, but this one's tricky today, so your brain's gonna have to work today. I'm just gonna put that out there.
So is the whole trick to figure out the value, you know, you basically have to figure out the value of each picture, and that's how you're, I mean, it gives
yes.
you the total.
So you're back to today's.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's the one you just posted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you remember Monday, like I said, Monday was similar to this one, but this one's even got an extra twist to it. So it's not exactly like Monday.
Yeah, well,
Monday
listen,
was the easier version of this.
This is coming from the guy that to learn math, my grandmother literally had to bring out a jar of pennies and pour the pennies out to help me learn basic addition, so I don't feel confident in this. And confident.
No, this is not where you need to start. You basically have jumped into a AAA tournament in travel ball. This is not where you need to start. Like, no, yeah, this is not going to be your good starting point brain teaser.
Yeah,
just saying. You should have worked your way up, starting back on Monday. That was the easiest of the bunch. And it still wasn't easy. None of these have been easy.
No, none of these are easy. There's no such thing as easy with these.
All right, we'll come back, and we will put a bow on the first hour here on this Thursday of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. The answers are flowing in on our brain teaser today, and they are all over the place, which is what I expected. That's good. That's good. Keep them coming. Let's work those brains today. Willie, I'm a little disappointed you didn't say anything about the prize. No comment whatsoever. On the prize.
Well, this is a great prize. I mean, you have to wait a while. You might, you know, I don't know if this could be something you could do anytime soon, but it's a great prize. Wellness is an important thing.
We used to do a lot of work with this place. We worked with them closely
yes.
for many, many years. And what does that say? All right, did you guys see the comments by Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlsby? He said that right now he's concerned about having a full football season. And when you read some of his comments, he said he's been speaking with other Power 5 conference commissioners on a daily basis. And they remain concerned about whether or not they're going to have a full football season because everything is uncertain right now in these times. And they're trying to figure out what are some good contingency plans. And they continue to discuss that. And that's good. That's kind of going along with the theme of yesterday. You better be proactive. You don't want to be reactive. You need to be proactive in these times. Figure out a way around this. Don't just sit and wait. Sitting and waiting is not the solution right now. Figure out ways to make things happen and make adjustments in a safe way and figure out a model that's going to work, because I think it's very naive to think that you're just going to roll into your season and play it all the way to the end and everything is going to be hunky-dory. That's not how it's going to work. So get in there and figure out the best way to try to make your season go off. Because as he says in this article, which is something we've been talking about, guess what? Football pays the bills. And they're already, people are taking cuts and, you know, furloughs and all this stuff is already going on as we sit here on April the 9th. If you don't have football season, all these checks, everybody already knows that's going to be coming from the NCAA are going to be much, much smaller this year than they've ever been in a long, long time. And so they continue to work through this and talk about what the impact of not having a full college football season or a college football season would have for a lot of programs. It would be devastation. I mean, absolute devastation. So as we sit here on April 9th, I hope they are talking daily, and I hope they are coming up with any and every plan possible to try to make this season work, whether it's with fans, without fans. I don't know what they're talking about. There was no specifics in this article, but that's what they need to be doing.
Well, some of the things that they have been discussing, with the backdrop of this, it's one thing for a league, right? We've talked about how complicated it is for baseball or hockey or basketball to resume their season when you're simply talking about how do you keep your athletes and all of the staff involved, you know, to the smallest number you can keep, and how would you quarantine those people? What adds the layer to it, and it's an extremely complicated layer, is in college athletics, just take football, the athletes are students, right? They're going to class with everybody. Mm-hmm. They're mixing with different people, so they can't be quarantined. Unless you basically said something like, you know, every class would be online, like they would be sitting in a study hall taking their classes, and who knows what the atmosphere would be like on the campus itself. You know, maybe that's how schools are going to have to roll too. So that's something you have to coordinate, you know, how each particular school is conducting class. So not every school would have the same philosophy potentially, right? I can't imagine that every single school will do it the same way. It'll depend on where the school is, where the wave is, where the curve is, all of these things. And then there's the whole speculation about, you know, when the weather gets cold, will there be another wave of virus? So there's just all kinds of things that has to be considered. I don't know if you can put this puzzle together right now, but I agree with you, Darren. They're trying to get ahead of it. They're trying to spell out every possible direction this could go and talk about the what ifs.
Well, I think we've seen that over the last few days, and you know, we talked about it on this show yesterday. Ryan and I got into it this morning. People like Dana White, Vince McMahon, you know, I haven't mentioned the other wrestling league, AEW, you know, they've done stuff too. That's what it's going to take. That type of thinking outside the box and aggression, and you know, being, you know, you want to listen to the health officials. It's obviously different between UFC and football. And the logistics involved, but I do think that you have to start having those conversations. You have to have multiple plans. It's not just one plan. You have to have plan A, B, C, D to try and get a season in, just from simply an economic standpoint.
Well, football is the most difficult to pull off. There's no doubt about it. There's more obstacles in the way. Luckily, they have the smallest season, so you don't have to – we're not talking about a big, long season. Their season is the smallest, but they've got so many hurdles to jump over and hoops to get through because they have the biggest venues. They have the biggest rosters. It's the most contact of any of the sports, and so they've got a lot of things they have to get past. I don't know – what is, I mean, we've talked about Major League Baseball. We've talked about hockey. We've talked about the NBA. We've talked about NASCAR and golf and wrestling and UFC. We got into that hot and heavy yesterday. I don't know what's the right solution. I mean, to me, I think it's extremely naive to think that we're going to pack people into football stadiums in the fall. I think that is probably unrealistic. But as we've talked about, the fans are important. Jack Schwarber, get it. We got it, dude. You need to wake up, the Notre Dame athletic director. Well, no duh. You think that you only want to play games in front of cheerleaders and bands and fans. Well, no duh. You know, you and everybody else. But that is certainly not the mindset we need, is well, if we can't have our cheerleaders and our band and our fans, then I don't think we really want to be playing. Really? That NBC contract you have pays a whole lot of bills that you're in a university and with your athletics. So, to me, they need to figure out, just like most all these other sports, the money is in the TV contracts. You better figure out how to get your product on television so at least you've got the TV contract. You may not have concessions. You may not have parking. You may not have ticket sales. But if you've got TV contracts, you've got something. If you don't have that, you got big, big problems moving forward after the 2020 season. Going into the calendar year of 2021, I don't know what in the world a lot of these schools would do. So that's what they need to do. I don't know how you go about figuring that out, but that's why they get paid well, and hopefully they'll come up with a solution.
Well, and let me add this point too, because think about this. So right now we're all watching, Netflix or old games, or we're just doing whatever we can to entertain ourselves.
By the way, I finished up season one last night of Ozark. Wow.
So now you're ready. You're ready for season two. But that's what we're doing. We're binge watching shows. If they come up with a plan with any of the sports we're talking about, NASCAR was one we brought up yesterday that could have a prime opportunity. But let's stick with the football conversation. They come up with a plan. They're going to play games. They're not going to have fans. If you're one of these restaurants that, whether it's a chain or a local restaurant, that you have now shifted your business idea to doing takeout or delivery or things like that, I mean, aren't you doing a backflip in excitement to know that you can invest in some advertising during one of these games of, hey, you're sitting there watching Notre Dame, call X, restaurant and we'll deliver it to you? I mean, because businesses are struggling to get people out, and takeout is still available, delivery is still available. So I think that they're, that's another way to stimulate the economy with different, advertising for takeout and delivery.
I think as we sit here today, the solution to college football I don't know that you can make a solution now. There's just no way. We've got to have big advancements in how we test people, right? How we diagnose and where to go from here. You just have to hope that there's a lot more knowledge of this entire picture by the time you have to make the call, right? Once you get into like August, September at the latest, but really August, right? You got to make the call. Are teams allowed to practice? Are we going forward with September, or are we looking to push the spring to try to salvage it then? All of those things have been thrown out there as possibilities, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything. But I think
What can we learn between now and then? That's what everybody's going to be watching for with the testing. And you're hearing about developments of tests that you can get the result quickly. I can give you the test, Chase, and in 15 minutes I can tell you, are you positive or not? Or, the next thing is I can test Darren, and Darren has tested, and it tells me that Darren has already had the virus. He's got the antibodies. Maybe he didn't even know he had it, but he had it. So now he goes into a category. And then we get the data on everybody. Now, we're still a long way from getting enough of these tests to get everybody the test, right? We're still behind on that, and it's going to take time to get that. But those are the kind of advancements that are going to have to be made to really put the picture together.
No doubt about it. We will come back and start the second hour with Mookie Betts. We will catch up with him for hour number two on this Thursday of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.